Greetings, friends. Sam Rejofsky here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, making radio great again. Boy, Saturday morning here, or afternoon. Gosh, it's time is flying. So we've pushed back the program this week, hoping, rubbing our finely manicured fingers and soft hands together in intense anticipation of this Mueller report that got dropped on us late Friday. Well, not on us. Attorney General William Barr is the one who's got it in his pudgy fingers and is reviewing it now and presumably will send some sort of executive summary to Congress, both to the Senate and to the House. He sent a letter yesterday to members of both houses, right, of the Senate and the House, and he told them, "I've got the report, and I will make some portions of this available to you as quickly as I possibly can." So, what is not speculation is the report's done; it is finished. The other thing is we don't truly know, and we don't truly know if there are going to be further recommendations for prosecution. And I would hold off. I think that the efforts here right now to say, well, aha, nothing happened. No indictments of Don Jr. No indictment for Jerome Corsi. No indictments for Jared Kushner, for example, let alone recommendations for impeachment or prosecution of the president. I just don't. Let's wait a few more hours, a couple more days, and see what is actually in this report, because I never trust any of this stuff before it actually comes and is in front of me. I also won't trust anything that cable news tells me, and I don't do that. Whatever you do, don't let the cable news people summarize it for you, because newsflash, they're not going to read it. And second newsflash, everybody's got their own heartfelt, sincere, undying desire for the report to say X or Y depending on their position. And so their take on this is going to be biased through the lens that they have. Now, I, as you know, am a Trump enthusiast, proudly so. I also am an attorney, and I look at these things through that perspective, and that's how I will dissect this for you once we have it publicly available. I assume it's going to be publicly released, but I'll sort through whatever I can find, and by next week, by the next show, I'll have some sort of information for you. So that much I do promise you. I do not believe that Trump was ever interviewed, and I want y'all to let that sink in for a minute. All this talk that Trump was going to be interviewed, he was going to be grilled, and Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, what a nincompoop, and gosh, what's the president doing, and back and forth, and I'm going to sit down, I'm not going to sit down, I'm going to do it, I'm not going to do it. Can I offer you a little bit of retrospective insight now? One, if the president had sat down for the interview, we would have known about it. That would have been a big deal. We would have heard that. So I assume with the report being concluded, the president did not sit down for an interview. The president, legally, as the target of the investigation, is not obligated to sit down for an interview and talk to the cops. In fact, Trump may be the only guy smart enough in this whole cluster mess who didn't get seduced by the fine G-men leading this investigation to blab. So I would suggest to you that, again, looking at this strictly through the attorney lens that I have, I Trump's the guy that did this exactly right. He played a game with Mueller, and he ran out the clock. Clearly, the pressure on Mueller is at some point you got to wrap it up, especially when your case is as thin as Mueller's case is. I mean, 600, 700 days of investigating nothing is absurd. And so what Trump did, I think, and what Giuliani did and Trump's legal team did is they played a little bit of back and forth cat and mouse game with Mueller's people. Oh, the president. Well, absolutely. The president will come and talk to you 100%. Oh, not this week. You know what, Bobby? Maybe next week. Maybe. You know, why don't you give us your questions in advance and we will give you some written answers back? And so it went. You know, at the end of the day, it would have, I promise you, the only thing that could have really sunk Trump here is him talking freely with any kind of federal investigator. Because somewhere he would fall victim to his rhetorical style, which is not always 100% factually based. Now, the other thing that didn't happen here, and you've got to understand this. Trump didn't fire Mueller. Can I just say the obvious? Trump did not come in and fire Bob Mueller. And he screamed and shouted about it being a witch hunt. And incidentally, as recently as last week, the public, based on a poll I saw, did you see that poll, by the way, that I was like 50%, 51% of respondents in this poll agreed with the president that it was a quote unquote witch hunt. It actually, people are, well, half the response, over half the respondents, a majority are responding to that word. Now, remember, president's very good. Trump is excellent at taking a word, branding it, and distilling what could be a complicated issue into a simple emotional trigger or simple emotional response. He does this, you know, Crooked Hillary. The nickname game is what he does. So he gave this thing a nickname from the get-go. And that nickname was Witch Hunt. And people are beginning to buy into it because, and again, this is the difference. The separation between the president's critics and then reality. The critics will say, will he stop saying that? Will he stop calling it a witch? Just be quiet. The problem is in the absence of Trump not rebranding Mueller's effort gains legitimacy on its own through all of its helpful aides in the left-wing media and other right-wing agitators of Trump and detractors of the president. And gradually over time, the Mueller probe gains legitimacy. So one takeaway I have here is that it seems to me at this stage, without seeing the report, but knowing that it's come to conclusion, knowing what I know today, that Trump has played his cards absolutely right, and that a lot of the criticism that he received actually he should never. I'm glad he didn't listen to because it I think has put him in a stronger footing, and not just legally, but I also think politically. So moving forward, what is this all about? Where does this go? How does it look? You know, what can we expect? I think it stops being a legal issue and is now purely a political animal. Okay, the investigations will not stop. And Adam Bug-Eye Schiff is still, you know, rambling on as of yesterday night was saying, well, I don't care what's in the Mueller report. I don't get the Mueller hill of beans to me. We are going to continue. And in fact, we will step up our efforts to look into the president and to examine his untoward relationship with Mother Russia. So this is now, if Mueller didn't find anything, if millions of dollars were spent and a guy whose existence, whose total legitimacy depended on discovering collusion between Russia and the president or the president's inner circle. And if he didn't find it, if he didn't get to a smoking gun, again, unlimited budget, a severe political will that, by the way, people helping this who are looking for their own get out of jail free card. And I'm going to explain more what I mean by that. So just let's put a little pin in that. But with all of that desire pushing this this investigation forward, and all of these people being targeted with basically life sentences for crimes that very rarely get even prosecuted in the real world of Washington politics, that they haven't found anything. I mean, Adam Schiff isn't going to find anything either. It's going to be nothing more than a political stunt to keep this alive for fundraising efforts for the Democratic Party base and to continue to delegitimize the president. So I now want to return to this issue of people protecting themselves. What I specifically am referring to is now that the investigation is over, and now that, let's say, the report really is a whole lot of nothing. I mean, there's going to be a ton of words. It's going to be boxes and boxes of documents, but I kind of predict like the Monica Lewinsky deal. When we got, the Starr report delivered to Capitol Hill, and you remember the visual of it? It arrived and they had carts, from the special prosecutor's office, carts filled with banker's boxes of documents. It looked like they had killed a whole forest of redwoods, just to print this thing. And from it, did we find out anything new? No. It all boiled down to the president doing nasty things with a fairly nasty looking woman. I think Monica's a nice lady, but not anyway. And then what? Well, we're not going to get into the quality of the cigar, but nonetheless, it turned out it was about sex and about lying under oath. And we knew all of that. We knew all of that. And so though you had this insane report with all these boxes of material, and they're just words, because at the end of the day, the story got distilled into those two issues, both of which were known right before the report was disclosed. So you're not going to – the same thing's true here. And now that it's going to be empty and no – Trump isn't going down. Let's suppose that, Don Jr. isn't going down. You don't have this. Kellyanne Conway's not going down. Basically, the core Trump team is untouched by this. The question will turn to how and why did this investigation get started in the first place? And Andrew McCarthy was putting out a great article. This is coming out this weekend in National Review. And this article has the positive as pieces. All right, well, fine. Daylight is great. And yes, we should give this report from Mueller daylight. But the same daylight should be put on the process that got us to this place that we, to where the special counsel is appointed in the first place. We got to look at these FISA warrants. We've got to look at this dossier that Christopher Steele produced, that the Obama administration paid money essentially to smear a political opponent of the president's, Obama's heir apparent, Hillary Clinton. Right. The politicization of the Justice Department under Obama, of the CIA, of the FBI, is so outrageous. And I don't have a lot of hope personally that I don't know. I don't give it a big chance that this is going to become the lead story and that, in fact, this will get properly investigated. But this, my friends, that is the real crime here. And if the circumstances that led to the appointment of Mueller, if Jim Comey's actions as FBI director, the exoneration of Hillary, the prosecution of Trump, if the, well, persecution, we'll say it that way, of Trump, if these things were to be looked at with half the effort, half the energy, half the rigor that they have looked into Trump-Russia collusion, my God, these people are all going to jail. And I'm telling you that on my honor. That is a fact. Okay, don't go anywhere. More on this and some clips. I also want to follow up a little bit on the terrorism story from New Zealand. I just have a couple of thoughts there. So just stay tuned. We're doing a quick show this Saturday, a little bit abbreviated. I know we went long last week, so we're going to shorten it a bit. So stay tuned. Every little moment of this is going to be important. Sam Rogowski on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, I got to be careful talking about Bill Clinton and his cigar. I've got my son in the studio. Daniel, I will tell you later what that was all about. And by later, I mean, I think you'll be 21. Okay. You know it's going bad. Look, you know that this report is not what the leftists wanted when you listen to them and their total emotional breakdown these last couple days. Well, okay, here's a good one. Friday night, you know, usually the news week is news cycle's winding down. People are starting to mellow, but Chris Matthews was having an aneurysm on air. Listen to this.
Why was there never an interrogation of this president? We were told for weeks by experts, you cannot deal with an obstruction of justice charge or investigation without getting to motive. You do not get to motive unless you hear from the person himself who's being targeted, a subject of the investigation. How can they let Trump off the hook? So far tonight, we have no reason to believe Trump is going to be charged by rhetoric in the document itself in the Mueller report. No, he will not be charged with obstruction or of collusion without ever having to sit down with the special counsel Mueller and answer his damn questions. How can that happen?
It's America, you freaking idiot. And we're not obligated to sit down and talk to the popos. I mean, you know, it's so funny to me. Democrats can be the biggest ACLU civil libertarians when it comes to minorities getting arrested for crimes they're actually committing. But then, God forbid, okay, along comes a Republican president who's an old white dude, and that guy, he's got no civil rights. You know my perspective on civil rights as an attorney. Everyone's got them. The rich guy has them. The poor guy has them. The man has it. The woman has it. The black guy has it. The white guy has it. You get my point. I don't care if you're a transsexual. I don't care if you're a homosexual. I don't care if you're straight. Whatever. You got the same constitution. And that's the America I want to live in. And these people are so obsessed with getting Trump that they have cut all these corners. And now they will be, my favorite phrase, taught to me by my wonderful father, hoist by their own petards. Because as we begin to look at all this corner cutting, the fake FISA court warrant applications where they more than likely lied to sitting judges reviewing serious applications to eavesdrop, wiretap, whatever you want to call it, a candidate for president. The Democrats' obstruction of the Trump candidacy and of the Trump presidency makes literally makes Watergate look like kids stealing milk money. Yeah. So that the veins that are bulging on Chris Matthews' neck, the blood pressure that is elevated throughout the mainstream media newsrooms across the country has to do with this myth is getting shattered at every turn. And they know eventually, they know in their heart of hearts, deep down inside, when you strip away all the delusion, they know that this is all hogwash. All right. So I promise I will get to this more when this whole thing gets dropped on us in whatever form it takes, and we have some real information to work with. But I think for the most part, everything that I've said today right now on this is going to hold true. So don't get too gleeful yet. But I promise you, if there was something big, I don't know. I'm telling you, if there was something big, there would have at least been an indictment of Don Jr., of Jared Kushner, other people close to the president. And the fact that you have all these left wingers apoplectic tells me that I think things are going quite well. All right. Make America great again. In just a couple minutes when we come back from the break. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very entertaining. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network, fighting dilatory obfuscation as bravely and vociferously as we can here on a Saturday afternoon now. Yes, Saturday afternoon. And we are eagerly waiting for this report from Mr. Mueller. Now, shelving that subject aside for a minute, I want to return to the subject of the shootings. The attack in New Zealand last week. The news was very fresh; it had just happened, and I just emotionally was not prepared to deal with the political considerations of the event. Now, there are a number of political considerations. I just want to make a quick observation, and that is that. This situation occurred. So we have two different types of reporting out there when it comes to terrorist attacks. And in my view, one type of terrorist attack is perpetrated by, let's say, white nationalists, or we'll call it just other than Muslims. And then you have the other type of terrorist attack that is perpetrated by Islamic terrorists. And the left is obsessed with not calling Islamic terror Islamic terror. They are terrified, pardon the pun, of going anywhere near that phrase. And yet it's almost incredible that when it comes to what occurred in New Zealand, immediately, I mean, as soon as it became clear to all of us very quickly that this guy was a deranged white supremacist, that he was an awful human being who hated Muslims. We knew it. What? How did we know it? Well, because he put it all on the internet. The same way ISIS does it. The same way Hamas does it. The same way other Islamic terrorist organizations, groups, individuals do it. You don't need, and I'm all for investigating things, and I'm all for taking a measured approach, but you don't need a long process of experts to come along and tell you what it means when somebody is using plain words to express their motive. So, here is the Sam Nation position on all of this. Terror is terror. If you kill people in the name of a political ideology, it's terrorism. And there's a whole lot of Islamic terrorism out there, and it needs to be called that. And we've spoken at length about it here on the program. But right now, this particular incident, this is white nationalism. Whatever you want to call his ideology, it's an ideology-based, ideologically motivated murder. And it's terrible. It's sick. And again, just if you didn't listen to last week's program, I'm not using his name. I'm not going to do that moving forward on this program. Now, what I thought was very interesting and what I will submit to you as, I don't know, not proof, but this is a case study of this, is that several days after the attack in New Zealand, in the Netherlands, a man attacked some people, shot some people on a city tram in the city of Utrecht, which is in the southern portion of the country, big university town. Both my parents studied at that university, as a little side note. So our family is familiar with the town. And it became almost immediately clear that it was an Islamic terrorist that shot non-Muslims. Well, CNN, and it's just two different articles written by CNN, and it was within a couple days of each event. So the time period is exactly the same. So from the CNN piece, the atrocities in New Zealand highlight three emerging trends in the West. This is a quote. Attacks against Muslim targets, the use of social media as a platform for terrorists to share live stream videos, and the violent targeting of houses of worship. So three emerging trends in the West. Emerging trends are, attacks on Muslims using social media, right, and targeting houses of worship. It goes on to talk about how, it gives a few examples. I don't even know if it talks about Dylann Roof, but I guess Dylann Roof was the guy who shot up the black church. Was it North Carolina? Or South Carolina. Anyway, terrible attack. So there have been instances of this. But when you compare it on a global scale of what Islamic terrorism has produced in terms of carnage, it's astounding. There's no comparison numerically. Both are wrong, but you can't go emerging trends. I mean, this is language. This is wishful language among people who do not want to talk about an obvious problem. So again, my perspective on this is terrorism is terrorism. And you go back to the definition, which, by the way, you know what the actual definition, producer Robbie's found it for me. The unlawful use of violence and intimidation, especially against civilians, in the pursuit of political aims. There it is. That's terrorism. So if you've got a manifesto, if you've got a political aim, you're killing people to draw attention to it, terrorism. Utrecht shooting. This is the CNN piece. Note found in getaway car suggests terror motive. Suggests terror motive. A terrorist motive is being seriously considered, quote unquote, Utrecht's police and public prosecutor said in a joint statement. Does not appear to be a direct relation between the gunman and his victims. And I'll actually tell you, this article here, the second one, I mean, they already have the letter. They know what it says. It knows it's expressing hatred against non-Muslims. It knows. If this were a white supremacist attack, I guarantee you that the public prosecutor and the police chief in the city of Utrecht would write a letter condemning white supremacy, and rightly so. And so for me in this whole thing, I think I don't care what the political means are. Murder, intimidation is wrong. It's inappropriate. The motives should always be looked at when it comes to a crime. We just heard Chris Matthews raving about Trump's motives. Ah, motives! But then these people are always quick to discount and to hide motives and not want to talk about motives when the motives directly contradict their political agenda. And I think that's just regrettable. So I had those thoughts this week as I listened to different things. I'll give you a few examples of this when we come back here from a quick break. Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
You know, that's actually a really great point. The piece in CNN about the atrocities in New Zealand highlight emerging trends about violence against Muslims. I'll just tell you, the last 4 years, checking in here, haven't we been fighting an Islamic caliphate in the Middle East that's been slaughtering Christians, slaughtering non-Muslims, perpetrating heinous acts of terror, burning people in cages, killing women and children? You know, it's not exactly like we had a bunch of white dudes come together and start a, you know, an Aryan Nation caliphate somewhere. And that would be wrong, too. And despicable, right? You've just got to call it what it is. And we on this program are realists. And we don't let political correctness or our own political ideology get in the way of calling a spade a spade. Now, immediately following the attack, in fact, I had this clip. We had this clip prepared last week, and I just didn't think it was appropriate to begin talking about the politics of this. But Senator Richard Blumenthal, which is one of the favorite neutered beta males the Democrats have in the Senate, he's from Connecticut. This guy is such a loser. You got to listen to him. He's talking to Allison Camerota on CNN and talking about the shooting. And this was within 24 hours. Yeah, 24 hours. This is Bloomie's hot take.
Just another sickening mass shooting, mass murder at the hands of a white supremacist. We're seeing more right-wing extremism around the globe, as you know. What are your thoughts?
Words do have consequences, and we know that at the very pinnacle of power in our own country, people are talking about good people on both sides.
You mean the president? I've heard this from a guest this morning. They're having a hard time calling this out for some reason.
I think it's more than the president. It's the people who enable him and who fail to stand up to him and speak out. Words have consequences, like saying we have an invasion at our border and talking about people as though they were different in some fatal way. I think the public discourse from the president on down is a factor.
I mean, we don't have to guess, actually, at this. We don't have to connect the dots ourselves. This is what the suspects say.
This is so outrageous, disgusting, untrue, that it ought to enrage you the way it enrages me. First of all, the question of immigration on the southern border is a matter of legal and illegal law and breaking the law. The Democrats are obsessed with the president breaking the law, if you're just some guy that wants to be in America, and even if your motives are as pure as driven snow, you're still breaking the law, but they don't seem to care. Because for them, it's a political issue, and to pretend that it's a human rights issue or anything like that is just nonsense. And to frame the immigration debate, I'm going to say this over and over again, to frame the immigration debate as a racism issue is such a fraud. it doesn't deserve the time of day in a debate. But unfortunately, I have to give it to them because we here on the right, we do argue issues and we do not turn a good debate down. But the idea, right, that you have white supremacists, for example, committing crimes because Trump is giving them a political cover is outrageous. I want to say something about this. The problem with all of these numbnuts in the media and also, frankly, in the general voting public is that they went to college to smoke pot and to take classes on gender issues. Okay? Well, I went to college and I took statistics, math classes, history classes. Okay, you know, like the subjects that matter. There, if all white supremacists love Trump, it doesn't mean that all Trump supporters are white supremacists. That's a basic mathematical, logical fallacy. Do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, this is a really important point because what I have heard over and over again are precisely the things that Richard Blumenthal and Allison Kamerad are saying here in this clip. You know, Trump is really, you know, all these white supremacists there, they all wear MAGA hats. Well, let me tell you something. My father wears a MAGA hat, and I am so offended by this because I can tell you that the last person on this planet who has a mean thought in his mind is my father or anyone in my family. It's not who we are. But we like politically what the president stands for. We came here to this country, for example, as immigrants. And my parents came to this country legally and think other people should be able to come to this country legally and follow the same laws that they did. This does not make us racist. And the implication, right, that you know, that you've got this murderer, this mass murderer, this disgusting piece of crap human being who ought to be hung from a tree until dead, who killed these people in the mosque, the idea that because he said, well, I like Trump, that it implicates Trump in his ideological makeup is absurd. It's so absurd. It's just unnerving to me. This is an ongoing topic that I want to you'll see in the coming weeks. This is what the Democrats will want to do because it's a political ploy. They want to connect this type of bad behavior to the president, to damage him politically. And you know what? The president's comments about there being good people at that rally, good people on both sides. You know, can you imagine if somebody came along after an Islamic terror attack and said, every single Muslim is a terrorist. And then President Trump comes along and says, no, there's good people on both sides. There's good people on that side. This argument about this is so absolutely disingenuous and illogical. So let's cut through the crap. Terrorism is terrorism. Evil is evil. And there should be no tolerance for it in our society, period. Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. All righty. You know, all these Democrats that were hoping that Trump would be impeached, I don't know if they necessarily understood that, Vice President Pence would become president, which I think would be a real nightmare to leftists. Because can I tell you, can I let you in on a little secret? You guys are all so busy over there on the left calling Trump, you know, basically the Grand Dragon of the KKK. But what you don't realize is that Trump is the most progressive Republican president that we've had ever. Ever. If you took the name Trump away and you disassociated the president's policies from his rhetoric and from not just from his rhetoric, I hate to fall into that trap, from the slanderous coverage of him and distilled it into bullet points, you would agree with most of it. I'm talking to you leftists out there. You would agree with most of it. 51% or more. Guarantee it. Okay, so I bring that up just as a little side note. So with this, you know, there's been a lot of fantasy type stuff about who ought to be president. Plus, we've got an election coming up. And there was a big hands-off Venezuela protest last Saturday. And Daily Caller went out and talked to some protesters about, you know, trading Trump for Maduro. Now, Maduro's a murdering thug. He's the, what would we call him? Kind of the baby Huey Jr. sidekick to the dearly departed Hugo Chavez. Spiritual godfather of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And he's, the country's starving. The lights are off. Doctors can't even operate on people. Well, it's free, right? Everything's free. But, you know, they can't operate on people because they're in the freaking dark. And these are Americans who have it great in this country talking about answering the question, would you trade Trump for Maduro? Listen to this.
Would you trade Trump for Maduro?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think Trump, I think Maduro was democratically elected.
Probably, yeah, sure.
More than likely, yes, of course.
If there's a Nicolas Maduro out here who's going to bring us to revolution, I will support that movement.
Nicolas Maduro could come and be our president?
Yeah.
Oh, any day. Any day. Look, all the check marks are there. He's not white. Okay, he's a minority. Okay. He looks a little too much like Saddam Hussein, though.
Womp, womp. No, he literally styles his mustache after Saddam Hussein in admiration for Hussein. You idiot. You know, do you remember Liberia when a handful of freed slaves got together and they created the Black Star Line, and they went back to Africa and started a country, and the country is a terrible place. I mean, to this day, I understand America's not perfect. I get it. We are not perfect, and Trump is not the perfect president. But you are literally out of your mind if you think that you'd be better off under a guy like Maduro in the Venezuelan system. Now, speaking of being out of your mind, completely bananas nuts, my friend Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Here she is Wednesday night speaking with Seth Meyers, wondering about this obsession that people have with her.
A group of people that seem to have an obsession with you is our friends over at Fox News.
Oh, yeah.
They talk about you a lot. Are you surprised with the speed at which they seem to have shifted all their attention and programming to you?
I mean, it's weird.
Yeah.
And like, why are so many grown men just obsessed with this, like, 29-year-old? I mean, it's great. I love the...
Why are so many grown men, like, obsessed with, like, this 29-year-old? Well, I don't know. Maybe these grown men are a little concerned that you just put the kibosh on the number, what is it, the number one biggest company in America, Amazon, from going into a state that is dying on the vine because it's being taxed to hell and damnation and back. And, you know, this was going to be a giant shot in the arm for a lot of taxpayers and a lot of politicians and a lot of business people, a lot of property owners. Why are people obsessed with you? Well, maybe because at 29, you ran for Congress and you won. And you ran on a fantastically absurd, crazy left-wing ideology that we all know is a joke. But we take you seriously by virtue of your position and the enormous amount of damage that you can cause, evidenced by you sinking Amazon's HQ2 deal in New York. So maybe that's why we grown men are obsessed with you, Alexandria. Yeah, she's a nice lady, but totally nuts. Sam Rejofsky, look, I promised you, short program, more next week. When we get this report, I will follow this closely and report back to you soonish. Have a wonderful rest of your weekend. Thank you, thank you. Love you all and grateful to have you here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. People, keep up.